Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Stone Cold Shots, the professional wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode here, every 2 weeks, we review, we recap, we rate a professional wrestling pay-per-view for the uninitiated from any promotion, from whatever time period we feel like. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves this week? Let the Stone Cold Shots universe know who you are. And if you could take any 1990s musician and turn them into a on-camera wrestling personality in current day, who would you want to see?
Internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. And if I can take any... Does Trent Reznor count? He's technically late 80s.
No, I'll give you Trent Reznor, totally.
I'll do Trent Reznor. So he's buff as hell. He's into industrial music. his entrance music would be fucking dope. Dope as shit. Plus, again, like these industrial guys, he'd have all the outfits. He'd probably have a cool entrance in general. Really angry guy. He'd make a great heel, yep. I imagine. I think Trent Reznor is a pretty good choice for this. Thanks for letting me skate.
Very good choice.
I don't know who that is.
The Nine Inch Nails dude.
Oh, okay. I'm Lauren. I'm a regular darling. I'm going with like the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC as just a general like pretty boy band. And like it's a faction of pretty boys.
Yeah. Do you do like a War Games match between the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC?
Oh, yes. That's taking it to another level.
That'd be sick.
They would basically all just be like the fashion police, but in shitty 90s wear with like neoprene and like baby blues. And like it would all be about like being sensitive and stuff, but they would all be like really flippy and technical.
So there was a group like that in WCW called Three Count.
Really?
Yeah, and Hurricane Shane the Hurricane Helms, he was part of that group.
Nice.
That's wild.
Of course. I feel like everybody always says like Simpsons did it, but I feel like
wrestling
late 90s wrestling did it.
That makes sense.
I'm nobody's darling. I am your heel host, Campbell Falconer.
Ooh.
And I'm also going to kind of cheat like Josh did on this one and go with like an 80s musician who also had a bunch of output in the 90s with his band, the Rollins Band.
Oh.
I'm
going to
pick.
That was my second
Henry
choice.
Mostly because like similar reasoning as Josh, that like Henry Rollins is buff, he's angry. But I also just think it would be fucking hilarious to put a man with like no sense of irony in his entire fucking body into wrestling.
Right.
You know, like that is a dude that is like self-serious to his own detriment. Like more so
than Dave Meltzer even.
Well, I was going to say he would be like the even worse fit version of CM Punk. Like and CM Punk is already a dude who is like way too self-serious.
I think you're like, on point with that.
I just think
Rollins,
it would be funny to see.
Rollins would just take himself seriously. But like with Trent Reznor would just be this whiny guy that would always be complaining about something backstage.
Yeah.
Cut off my entrance early.
Of course, we're talking about, after a fashion, Billy Corgan's NWA. We're kind of 1 year out from when we did our first episode about NWA Power. And we thought it would be a great time to take a look at UWN/NWA's Primetime Live. We're talking about the first episode of that from back in September. So this is kind of an interesting thing, right? Because we had NWA Power. Billy Corgan was like, all right, we're revitalizing the NWA. We're going to put it up on YouTube, get people watching week by week. And then COVID hit and that kind of dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've started doing in association with the United Wrestling Network, which is, I was looking this up and it's like three promotions. So it's Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, Championship Wrestling from Arizona, and Championship Wrestling from Memphis. Three kind of promotions that in 2013 like came together to form this overarching promotion that is now allying itself with the NWA for a little bit more clout, a little bit more viewership. And they're doing a weekly pay-per-view on the Fight Network. So every Tuesday, it's like $9 US, and you can tune into this like 2-hour show.
Which pretty steep price.
Pretty steep.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about that now? Do we want to get into that later?
We can talk about it now. It's the elephant in the room. I mean, you know, a lot of people haven't even heard of UWN. And, yeah. You know, it's pretty ballsy to ask for $9 a month. And, like, we'll get into why, especially, it's ballsy, you know, after reviewing the show. And this is the debut show, right? Is this it?
Well, Josh, it's not $9 a month. It's $9 a week.
Holy shit. Right. So
$9 an episode. They do offer like 4-episode packages for $25.
Get out of here.
Save yourself a whopping $11 there. That's getting more than one of them for free. That's paying for itself at that point. I don't know why. We're not sponsored by UWN. I don't know why I'm shilling so hard for this. But if you do want to get some me undies this Christmas.
There you go. Get us paid, Campbell.
It does seem a little ludicrous to be charging like $1 less than the entire WWE network. Or like, this is like this hour and a half show is like a month of New Japan World.
It's hard. Like, I kind of see their point. Like, I like the idea of paying the small company, like the independent company, for the product, and I really appreciate that. Like, I try to do my part and buy from independent stores and all of this, but
yeah,
for some reason, our
household soap budget has gone through the fucking roof this fall. I tell you.
But I don't know why. It's hard for me to extend that logic to wrestling. And I feel like I could do it if it was, like, in person. I would feel a lot more okay with going to see a show paying. But
you know what it is? Here's the thing. Is that the problem is that in aligning themselves with the NWA and releasing their debut episode like almost exactly a year from the debut of Power, you are inevitably going to draw these comparisons. And I was really trying, when we were watching this, I was trying to watch this as its own thing, but the entire time couldn't stop thinking about how much I liked NWA Power more. Like, I thought it was a better product. Yeah. And it was fucking free. It was on YouTube.
Right.
Like, you've already shown us that you can do, and I mean, like, maybe that's why they're not doing it right now, is because it was too expensive to put out for free without having a studio audience there.
But there's got to be a middle ground, like something where they can like just be part of a subscription service and then get like
I do think that you can watch it as part of a subscription to Fight TV. I think I didn't look into it enough.
That would make more sense.
Yeah. But they are like, we watched this for like the $8.99 US or whatever. Because we didn't want to subscribe monthly to Fight TV for this one tape that we were going to review. Let's get into it though, eh?
Let's do it.
Like, I think we've said our piece about like the cost. And if one of our two listeners is somebody who is buying these and supporting these small, like, sort of like mid tier independent wrestling promotions, fucking good for you. Like, that's awesome. That's 100%. Great.
If you have the liquid income to burn, and I'm a guy that subscribes to YouTube Premium. And
Josh is that guy.
I'm that guy, and I have a problem with the $9. Anyway, we'll move on, but good for you if you're doing it.
So we kick things off. We have Dave Marquez giving a little opening kind of, hey, everybody, glad to see you. Mean Gene Okerlund rundown of the night, welcoming everybody to the debut episode of UWN Primetime Live. Again, very kind of like reminiscent of the NWA Power sort of thing, with just a little bit more of an updated aesthetic. He's interrupted by the Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson.
I really love that name.
Wearing a nice Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China tank top.
I'm so glad you noticed that.
I'm not going to not notice it.
I've literally thought about purchasing that off like Etsy before. That's the only reason I'm so familiar with that print.
I used to watch a YouTube channel of guys playing Warhammer 40,000 because one of the dudes always wore that tank top.
I've never heard you refer to it as Warhammer 40,000.
Well, for the casuals, you know.
I think we're talking about a subsect of a subsect right here. Yes.
Hey, Shayna Baszler has got Chaos Emblems on her ring gear. There is a wrestling Warhammer crossover for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
What do we think about the Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson? I thought this was a pretty fucking smoking promo.
I thought he was amazing in this promo. Yes, I really liked him in this first bit.
I like
him. It's perfect too.
Yeah, like
it's perfect to like set him up against David Marquez, who is the sweetest man. Just such a lovely dude, and then to have this guy come out and be like, hey, fuck you, and just be really loud, I was immediately like, well, fuck this guy. Yeah. Why is he coming in on David's spot? He's trying to tell me about the show.
You have to say, everybody knows who I am. Everybody knows who I am. I've literally never fucking seen this guy before in my whole life.
Never heard of this dude before.
But he was pretty solid promo, though.
Very solid promo. Good look. He's like kind of more like jacked Eddie Kingston, looking like the singer of Downstate.
To me, he sounds like Eddie Kingston in his like energy and his promos, but he looks like the guy who was the White Rabbit, who has the
Karrion Kross. Yeah, he
looks like him.
I was he's like a Karrion Kross and Eddie Kingston hybrid.
Yeah, a bit.
So. Good promo. They kick it over to the ring. I thought this ring setup and like the general vibe was great.
Very professional. WWE.
So for me, it looked like it was kind of a halfway between like, it definitely wasn't trying to compete with WWE. Like it wasn't trying to be the Thunderdome. To me, it looked like a perfect mix between like the setup that Impact currently has and the setup that NWA Power had.
I was going to say that it gave me like Impact vibes, right? Like that was 100% it. I have to be honest. I kind of like the Power setup a little bit better. Like I like the retro, like committing to the the NWA old school 70s 80s kind of look. I thought they had a really good aesthetic with that. And I'll be honest, like, I was a little disappointed with the setup. It looked good. Like, it looked like a wrestling show. But it kind of looked... That's what I liked about Power, right? Like, it looked different than everything else. And I thought this kind of just kind of...
had its own personality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this kind of looked the same as everything else. So, it's a nice set. But, I prefer the old one.
This definitely felt like UWN already kind of had its thing going. And then they brought in the NWA and tried to bring in elements of the Power studio setup while still keeping it a little bit more in line with like the Impact kind of, because like the Impact still has like a ring barricade as if there is a crowd there, which there obviously isn't. And this didn't. They were not trying to hide the fact that it was just a big empty room studio space. You could see the commentator's desk like kind of super brightly lit just off to the side. I feel like this was like your perfect middle ground between the Power setup and the Impact kind of look.
I agree with that. I get what they're trying to do, and I appreciate the effort. It's just I guess they can afford it with $9 a week,
We get our first match. We have EJ Sparks versus Hammerstone for the West Coast Championship.
Yeah, Hammerstone's the champ.
Yeah. So
Hammerstone's a hoss, eh? This guy's... You're telling me this guy's not going to be in NXT. If, when we record next year's episode on whatever NWA is doing at that point, whatever
show thing they got, Billy Corgan's got next.
Whatever show they got going on at that point. He's NXT bound, this guy, right?
The Forgotten Sons are going to get bumped back down to NXT and Hammerstone's going to join them.
Yep.
Because he totally came out and I was like, this dude is Charlie Hunnam's stunt double from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
You guys are beautiful.
I thought he looked kind of like Chris Jericho in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know. Like, older Chris Jericho, like current Chris Jericho, his like body and his energy, but more like I don't know, like, angry and hyped up. But his actual look, like, he comes out in a red leather jacket with his hair in front of his face. I was like, this dude looks like Jericho's son or something.
This is the first instance that we get of tinted sunglasses matching a leather jacket. Which
is this a running theme?
Yeah. We'll come back to that later. But keep that in mind. How about EJ Sparks? He's a kind of smaller guy. I liked the beaded hair a lot. That's something that I don't think I've ever seen a wrestler have before.
I liked it too. I hated it at first because I thought it was just pink and green.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was, and it's weird because it's split like top to bottom, which is really unusual, instead of like half and half, like half of the head.
Yeah.
And I was really upset with it. And then I realized that there was also blue in there, and I liked it a lot better after that.
Really? I wish that he had changed, like had more dynamic ring gear, because like his tights and his boots were like just pink, and it, like, his hair was so colorful.
Yeah. It struck me kind of as generic wrestler kind of vibe. Yeah. I got from, and it was like, yeah. You know, I don't know. I know it's like Lauren's gonna have something to say about this gear. That's what I wrote down. I was like, Lauren's 100% gonna have something to say about this, but I didn't hear you talk about it.
His gear, like his undies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't notice anything about his undies. He's a nice butt.
Okay, well, I mean, all right. So it's technically.
So speaking of like generic kind of indie wrestling, that's kind of how I felt about this match. Like it was,
It was good though.
Fine,
it was good.
I would say serviceable.
Yeah.
Whoa, is this a 3 bald head rating I smell?
I thought Hammerstone was doing a pretty good job of like keeping up the intensity. I didn't really buy Sparks all that much. But like Hammerstone had some pretty good stuff. There was one point where like one of the beads fell out of Sparks' hair and he was like holding it up to the camera.
Whoa, I missed that completely.
One of his signature moves is called the spinal countdown. And it was,
you're taking all the good stuff tonight, Campbell.
I asked how you guys felt about the match and nobody said anything. Just running through my notes.
Spinal countdown's amazing. What a great name for a move that is.
It's so good. I thought, like, I actually liked EJ Sparks and I liked his whole vibe. I get what you're saying, where it's kind of like generic indie wrestler. He does flips, he does this, he does that. Like, they were trying to sell him as, like, a Muay Thai fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, like, didn't enjoy the fact that they were trying to sell that he could beat Hammerstone with his strikes.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel like you need to like sell me on his like stamina or like him being able to run rings around him and tire him out. But like, I don't believe that this fucking huge hoss guy who's delivering really insane clotheslines to this smaller wrestler, like just leveling him, is going to be felled by multiple small strikes. I was like, I don't know. You need to sell me more on like him flipping and kick, like doing really crazy flips or something. Something like that's not just. It's like saying like, I don't know, if you get hit by Rambo, like it doesn't matter if he's hitting you slow. He's hitting you fucking hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
So that's a good analogy.
to me, it's like
young indie man was in there with John Rambo the whole match.
Yeah.
but he really did feel like kind of like an indie match, and I agree with you. Like, His strikes weren't too impressive, I guess, either. Like, he wasn't really, like throwing them in, you know? It was kind of a little pulled back, so it didn't look like stuff was really connecting well with them. And, like, Hammerstone kept on, like, doing, like you said, like, these big suplexes, this nightmare pendulum, like, all these crazy name moves, too. And I'm like, this guy is fucking sick. So it's like, this is a squash match? But it didn't seem like a squash match. So I don't know.
Yeah.
You can do the like small guy who is good at striking. Like if you look at someone like a Pac or someone like Kenta, are both like smaller dudes who are fucking laying in those kicks.
Mm.
And that just like EJ Sparks just like wasn't that. For me, the best part of this match was I thought the commentary team was great for this whole show. I thought their play-by-play guy was doing a good job of like giving the story of like this title that I have never heard of before, and these two guys that I've never heard of before. I thought during some of the big spots, Joe Galli, who was like the play-by-play guy on NWA Power, was like he was losing it. He was selling it like Mankind got thrown off Hell in a Cell when like anytime Sparks got any offense, and it made the match better. Like it did exactly what commentary is supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah. I also really liked, I noticed they like cut over to commentary at one point here, and they all have lapel pins with the logo of the promotion that they are from.
That's cute. Yeah.
So Joe Galli had like a lapel pin of the NWA World's Championship. The other dude had like a lapel pin of like the UWN logo. And the chick had like one of, I think, the Championship Wrestling from Hollywood logo, which I thought was like a nice little touch, you know, nice little like attention to detail, kind of in the way that we were talking about the whole, like the setup and the ring as a whole with the banners and like that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Cherry on top.
It makes it feel like kind of like a national wrestling thing, right? Like a conglomerate, right? Like where it's like you're getting all these different feds that are coming together and like much in the spirit of the NWA. So I thought that, I'm with you. That was pretty cool. But it also led to countless championship matches throughout the night. This being the first of many.
Yeah. So Hammerstone won. He retained his championship.
No, I did want to mention that, like, the commentary team said that UJ Sparks was the Phoenix's favorite son about 45 times in this match. It was wild.
Yeah. It was crazy because they neglected to mention that Hammerstone was Pentagon Jr.'s favorite son.
That's great.
Josh, Hammerstone wins this for how many bald heads?
It's the three bald head lapel for this.
There you go.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, the bald head rating is the golden standard of professional wrestling podcast rating systems out of a potential elusive five bald heads.
Yeah.
And we're going places that Meltzer would never go. Meltzer would never review this show. You never hear Meltzer give a star rating on this show, this lowly weekly show. That's why you tune in here.
Would never pay that much for one episode.
Since the G1, I feel like you've been really fucking gunning for some.
It's important for Meltzer to know. Okay? Somebody's gotta cut him down, okay?
I feel like you need to get on the Twitter. I feel like you need to get back on the Stone Cold Shots Twitter, start fucking sniping at Meltzer.
He doesn't get Twitter, man. He responds to all the troll and he's like serious.
That could be you. Well, you could
actually
be the troll.
Kind of maybe. Okay, fine.
You could be like, hey Dave, I bet you'd give this podcast 5 stars in the Tokyo Dome. get him to listen to us.
We gotta get him some zingers though.
Moving on, we have Nick Aldis cutting a promo, and just like, Jesus Christ, I love everything about Nick Aldis.
he's such a like an old school kind of guy. Like he's such like that Hurley Race, Nick Bockwinkle, like the way he carries himself is always like, he's so well put together and he's such an articulate promo. It's always good.
Very articulate is perfect. And also, he always puts over the company.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that's especially the thing when you are working for something like the NWA that has like the history, but maybe not the attention right now, or something like the UWN that nobody has ever fucking heard of, is that like being the company man, and like even though he's supposed to be the heel, but like the fact that he's the top of the company is important to him as a character, makes the company feel important in a context where it's not WWE or AEW or New Japan.
Yeah.
It's so integral to me giving a shit about the promotion as a whole.
100%. Yeah, it makes me feel like the way he says like the 10 pounds of gold is like, it makes me feel like a fucking idiot for not knowing about that or not caring about it. I'm like, oh, it has like a cool name and stuff. Like it has this prestige.
When he was like, you've seen every match, you've seen the 10 pounds of gold series on NWA Power. And I was like, I haven't, and I feel like I should go back and watch that. I'm sorry, Nick. I let you down. Like, this, the way that he says, like, this world's championship is like so authoritative. It's amazing.
And it's like, but he gets promos perfectly because like you have to put over, you don't have to. I mean, like you can do like the MJF thing where it's like you just shit on everybody all the time, no matter who it is. but like a good way to like run this, like kind of like, you know, style of promo is like you build everything up. Like you build the championship up, you build NWA up, you build the program that you're on up. And then you build your opponent up, like you build them up, so it gives them credibility. It gives everything about it credibility, right? I did like
you make everything sound important.
Yeah, yeah, because it should be. It's like I like this promo. So it was like I don't know, like a 4 minute promo, but at the beginning of the promo, he says, "I've got nothing to say," and then he cuts this like four minute promo. I thought that was
great. My biggest thing about this is like, I never want to see him leave NWA. Like the last thing that I want is to see like Nick Aldis in WWE. Yeah. I think it would be great to see him do some sporadic appearances in AEW because it seems like AEW and NWA are starting to have this kind of working relationship with all the Serena Deeb, Thunder Rosa stuff. And like, I think him going in there. And like if he started cutting a promo on Cody, being like, this is like the way that you run this company is a sham, and like you need me, like the real world's champion, to come and bring some class to this organization. Like that's a feud for like Revolution, maybe, that I would be over the moon for.
Yeah,
I think would be great. But like he's a dude that it's like I never want to see him leave the NWA because I think he embodies like this so well. I never want to see him lose that belt, even though he's the heel, right? You know,
yeah.
He's great. We get our next match. We have Jordan Clearwater, the Golden Boy Jordan Clearwater, versus All Damn Day Will All Day. Sorry, the main event, All Damn Day Will All Day, I think is what they call him.
I think that's it.
He comes out and he gets mad and he does the like, listen up, you stupid ring announcer.
You gotta do it again and do it better.
What do you say? If I have to give you a cue card, I will. That was his only good line. The rest of this guy's shtick was kind of eh.
I really like that his name is Will All Day.
Yeah. Jordan Clearwater came out to like fucking James Storm's theme song, but he looks like King Joffrey.
Oh my god, I totally wrote the same thing, except I wrote he has like the cowboy like hangman theme,
yeah,
but he looks like Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
I thought he looked like Brock's son. I don't know.
This dude is, they were talking about how he's like trained by Machine Gun Carl Anderson. I've seen him wrestling a little bit on New Japan Strong, which is like the U.S. kind of Carl Fredrickson, L.A. Dojo, like Young Lions, New Japan thing that they've been doing. I think Jordan Clearwater is like everything that they were saying about him, about all the potential that he has. I agree with wholeheartedly. I think he's great in the ring. I really enjoy watching him like every match that I see. He needs to figure out what his gimmick is.
Yeah.
Like,
he needs to pick an aesthetic and stick to it.
Because he's coming out and he's wearing the, like, golden fucking trench coat, showing off his abs.
A la Will Ospreay.
But he's, like, also, his entrance music is, like, the like, good old country boy because he's from Texas. And he's, like, he's so heelish, but he's trying to play the face in this match. I feel like there was a lot of good stuff in terms of like in-ring work, but like as far as character went, from both of these guys, this was like a really bad storytelling performance.
I'm smarting against you saying that, but like I guess technically you're right. I was gonna say I really enjoyed Will All Day in this match, actually. I really liked him. I thought he was really great in-ring and he had great character work, but I will say he wasn't consistent in that he was supposed to be the heel and he started off really heely. But I ended up really liking him throughout the match, and it's because he had more of a face storyline throughout the wrestling match. Like he wouldn't give up and he kept getting, like, he was just trying to stop Jordan Clearwater from doing his one move, and he just kept doing it. He just kept resisting and trying to block him from doing that one move, and then like it really seemed like he was like fighting through everything and like mm-hmm. just kept going. And then there was kind of a all of a sudden it's over finish where Jordan sinks his one move that he can do that he tried to do about 50 times in this match. And he finally gets it and that's it. And
it's like you've never watched a wrestling match before.
I don't think they always feel like that. I feel like other wrestlers try other things.
Sure.
He literally was just raising his leg around. Like a fucking dog. Like, it was so stupid. I was like, try another move, my dude. Try something else, maybe. It's not working.
It paid off. Like, it paid off. You got him with it, though.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the secret to every wrestling match. Just keep on going for the same thing over and over until you hit it.
Yeah.
When I play WWE 2K, I'm just hitting triangle until I win the match, you know?
Like, keep on throwing people over the top and try to get them counted out.
Josh, how did you feel about this match?
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like, I thought it was I think the big thing kind of all night tonight, and I don't know, I guess it was anybody who wasn't like a Nick Aldis or a Bennett or somebody like that. I had a hard time kind of echoing what you were saying. I was like characters, right? Like I wasn't really invested in anybody, and I felt like their work in the match kind of like was maybe a little confusing. Like, I'm supposed to not like this guy. I'm supposed to like this guy. Which one's supposed to be like the chicken shit heel? Or if you're not doing that dynamic, who am I supposed to get behind? Or is this just supposed to be a good athletics match? I think Will All Day is going to be, you know, a potential star. And I think the other guy was all right too. But yeah, like, you know, like, we'll see. It's like, give him time to kind of muck around and develop a little bit, see where these guys end up, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I noticed a lot in this match from an editing perspective is it seemed like there were a lot of quick cuts, maybe to hide some botches.
I think so too. I think we missed some stuff too in the match because of that, right? Because it's I was noticing like it would just cut to something, be like, oh, I guess we completely missed that spot.
It would be someone setting up for a clothesline and then a cut to a different angle and a guy lying on his back after being clotheslined.
Yeah, I only noticed that once in this match, but I believe you guys noticing more.
The other thing that I will say to kind of both of your points about, especially Lauren, you talking about like Golden Boy always going for the Midas touch over and over again. Mm. And Josh, you saying that like it seems like he needs like a little bit more work is like, I'm wondering how much of that is just like, training, like working with New Japan, training under Carl Anderson. Like, my understanding is that a lot of the like Young Lions training methodology is like the idea that it's like you master five moves, that if you watch like a Yota Tsuji match or like a Shota Umino match, like any of the undercard on the recent New Japan stuff, it's like these guys are like the methodology behind the Japanese strong style wrestling is like you learn five moves really, really well and master those. And then you graduate to go on excursion and then come back with a full character.
I'd have been happy to see five moves from Jordan.
I'm wondering how much of that, like maybe it is just that he's like really green and not kind of getting there yet. But I think like I don't know how much of it is just in the context that I've seen him on like New Japan Strong is like, maybe I'm just giving him a little bit too much leeway here.
I don't think he's green. Like, I feel like the design, however they paced that match wasn't great.
When he did finally hit that big boot, it looked like it fucking took Will Alday's head off. Like, but that it was so good.
It was preceded by Will doing the most amazing suicide dive ever. And then he gets back, like, he just fucking levels him with a suicide dive and it was beautiful and he risked everything and they both pulled it off fantastically. And he gets back in the ring and Jordan doesn't sell that at all. Once he gets back in the ring, he just goes bop, he sticks his leg up, he happens to hit Will in the face with it this time.
Oh, it was
and
great.
That's the end. I don't know, I was upset by the finish.
Josh, how many bald stars, bald heads?
Oh, bald stars.
Bald gold stars. Heads. He's got three and a third bald stars on this one.
All right.
Yeah, I feel like that's a fair score for this match. Again, like, I think it's, you take something out of it when, like, the pacing of the match is weird and, like, again, like, tell kind of clear story in it, right? I think that was the only thing lacking. It's definitely not for a lack of skills.
Yeah. I agree.
We get a little like title card of like next week, Friendship Farm in action. And I just want to say these guys look like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I
wanted to see the Friendship Farm.
One of them is Jervis Cottonbelly, who did, he's like a big guy in Chikara. He did that spot that everybody went nuts about this summer where Orange Cassidy lulled him to sleep. Like they did the rockabye.
Rocked him like a baby. So he fell asleep and then he laid him down. He told everybody in the crowd, he's like, shh. And he told like the ref, shh. And then he like slowly pinned him.
Oh my God.
And Jervis Cottonbelly like rolled over in his sleep.
Yeah.
To get out of the pin.
That's cute. Like,
Very good kind of comedy wrestling. Next up, we have a women's match. We have the Killer Bay, Heather Monroe, versus the Brick House, Camille.
Sick.
Trees on the brand.
Fucking
house.
Fuck it.
Fuck.
You don't know the song Brick House?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Camille.
You gotta know that song. It was the biggest song in the 90s.
I definitely recognize the sounds that Campbell just made. I feel like I never knew that's what they were saying.
She's my
She got fucking jacked though, right? Like, I remember her when we watched like Hard Times back in January or whatever. She was there and she was not this cut. She was always like strong.
Damn, she put a lot of work into those shoulders and arms. Mm-hmm. My God.
She is like so weirdly put together. This is not a knock on her body or anything or the work she's done. But like, it's like somebody's like, she's like a Frankenstein's monster the way she's put together. It's like, you know, like Brock Lesnar's shoulders and then like, you know, some really like wiry arms. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
But she's like, so, like, she gave me, like, almost, like, a China vibe, except, like, smaller biceps, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
She also reminds me of Charlotte, too.
Yeah.
And she's gorgeous. She has a beautiful face. But, totally. Yeah.
It was a thing where it's, like, Heather Monroe came out. She had,
Austin Body.
Yeah. Her drag manager. And I was, like, oh, this is fun. This is a fun gimmick. And then Camille came out.
Mommy.
And I was just, like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is not going to go well. And like this, I feel like this of like any of the matches that we've seen so far, and like maybe any of the matches was like kind of the perfectly booked sort of like indie match.
Yeah.
Of just like you knew exactly what was going to happen, and then that happened.
Yeah.
To a T.
It was very clear. And like, I think that probably like the only thing that I wasn't sure of is whether Heather Monroe typically plays a heel or a face, because it seems like she probably gets a lot of help from Austin Body.
I think it's Halston Body.
Oh, Halston Body?
Yes.
That would make more sense. I could tell I was mishearing them, but I couldn't hear what they were saying. So yeah. Halston Body, we're going to go with that.
I have HB written down in shorthand. So.
I'm going to say Miss Body.
Miss Body. Also, Body's pseudonym was the Prism of Excellence, which I thought was really good.
That's fantastic.
Great. Yeah.
I really liked Miss Body's energy up in there.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell whether Heather Monroe was a heel or a face, but it kind of didn't matter up against Camille. I thought this was a really fun match. Like, Camille she just begins kicking the shit out of Monroe. Like, it is not a smooth, like, she just starts the match off really rough. Throwing her, like just ragdolling her around. Mm-hmm. I felt so bad for Monroe. And then Monroe starts, like, this is another thing that made me feel like Monroe is probably a heel regularly, but because she's going up against Camille, she's playing a different role. But like, she starts going for Camille's arm and focusing on like the arm and shoulder, which is smart, but generally a heel tactic to focus on one body part. But then I thought that it was like a pretty good match. But once Monroe started getting more offense in, I thought that she wasn't super smooth and was very hesitant.
So can I tell you, I was kind of like looking up Instagram profiles and like stuff for a lot of these matches, just trying to see like, oh, do these people, like, where do these people work? Like, what's the deal? And Heather Monroe has had a couple of matches on AEW Dark.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, that makes sense. that like this, she has AEW women's division written all over her, mm-hmm. you know, just in terms of like kind of lack of experience, not a super clear direction of character, in the same way that I think a lot of the AEW women's undercard does.
Yeah.
I agree that like, I wish that she had played up the chicken shit heel a little bit more and used the manager interference a little bit more. Cause that was like the ingredient that was kind of lacking for me.
Yeah. And then I feel like when they did try to involve, the manager like interference, it was not done well. Like they tried to have a spot where, Halston body got up on this apron and like was standing up over like the edge of the rope being like, mm-hmm. and then Camille like throws, or I can't remember whether Monroe is like running at Camille and she ducks out of the way, but there's a spot where like Monroe almost runs into her manager and like there's a moment where she's like, oh shit, oh no, and mm-hmm. then Camille ends up like getting the drop on her because she's distracted, but it was just done really messily. And like, I don't know. I feel like Monroe wasn't committing to things. Like there were several points where she does what I do, where I know I'm about to get hit, where I like stick my arms up, but she would do it like for general moves. Like she would just hold her arms up in front of her boobs to protect her boobs from impact. And it's like, you're a fucking wrestler, like get with it. Or like she would stop right before impact to brace herself. And like, she seemed like she was sort of tiptoeing around a lot of the wrestling moves. And I was just like, you gotta go for it, man. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I thought this match was pretty fun. I mean, like, it was a little by the numbers for the big, you know, burly powerhouse coming in and throwing around the opponent. But I thought Heather Monroe did a great job kind of in that role, right? Like, so it's exactly how it's supposed to go, where, like, you know, the big strong person gets to start at the beginning of the match. The opportunist heel finds an advantage in the match with, like, the arm or something like that. She just attacks it. I thought it was a well-put-together match. I thought this was a pretty well-booked match. I thought it was fun, right? It wasn't like a home run. It wasn't like a grand slam, but it was like, you know, as far as what we've seen and, I don't know, just pacing of the matches so far, I thought this was the best kind of book match so far. And it's like, you know, like it's kind of like hiccups or whatever along the way, but whatever, you know, like I thought it was fine for what it was.
Yeah. I definitely like, I feel like it sounds like I was dragging it really hard just because of Monroe, but like this was, I think it's one of my favorite matches of the night and like was definitely the most fun and easy to like understand all of the characters and everything. But
I thought the finishing sequence, the like transition into the spear was fantastic because they had been sort of teasing and threatening the spear all match, much like a Midas touch kind of. thing.
Nothing
but
like
that. when Camille finally like pulled it out and hit that, like she started at like the fucking 3-point stance and just like actually looked like she got hit by a truck. It was great.
Yeah.
How many bald heads?
I gave this one 3 out of 3 too. I thought the last match had better wrestling, but I thought this match was better put together.
Nice.
It was fun. It was a fun, cute match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a little promo with Eli Drake wearing matching blue tinted sunglasses and a bright blue leather jacket.
Oh.
Man, this guy sounds so much like The Rock, eh?
He sounds like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He sounds like The Rock mixed with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he looks like Mega Man mixed with Tony Stark.
What?
But the way his cadence in like the way he cuts his promo and his like inflections and the way he goes up and down and like dismissively like calls him like a jabroni or whatever he called him. Like I thought like it was like the cadence was so much like The Rock. It reminded me so much of that. I couldn't stop thinking about that all promo. It was a good promo, but I just couldn't stop thinking about that.
To me, he's very Stone Cold, and I thought that the last time that we were introduced to him, and I was more angered by it last time. Like last time I was like, he's just a cheap ripoff of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like,
yeah,
like, I don't know. I was like way more affronted by it last time. And it's grown on me a little more, maybe because we say yeah to each other all the time.
But,
like it worked for me better. And I feel like it might have worked better also in NWA Power, which is such an homage to older wrestling. like that type of personality, which is a huge throwback.
Eli Drake is actually a dude that I think would do really well in NXT.
I think he'd be better in AEW.
I think I got to side with Lauren on this one. I think he'd be better in AEW than in NXT.
Okay.
All right. So again, just kind of fit-wise, I think, you know, they can get Mike time. They're pretty interesting matches. You know, like, I don't know, like, they can get him in Team Taz, maybe. Then turn on him.
Yeah. He had a weird bit for this, like, promo where he was all about, like, he was like, I saw a dude at the gym who was had a shirt that said, like, I feed off your angst or whatever the fuck. And I thought, fuck that. Like, I'm all of it. Like, he was like, smile, man. I love to see you smile. Like, his whole bit was about positivity, which I thought was really interesting, which I guess makes sense during a pandemic. But, like, I thought it was funny that this, like, not bro-y wrestler, but he's just, like, a very man's man wrestler. But he's like, I like to see you smile, David Marquez.
Well, you shouldn't be going to the gym in a pandemic.
Yeah. But where is this filmed? Is this Florida as well?
L.A.
L.A.
Isn't that what Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson says later? You had me drive all the way out to L.A. from New York for this?
Yeah, all I heard him say was I drove from New York, and I was like, of course.
Yeah. Because you ain't got the balls.
Now that guy needs to join Team Taz.
Yes. Big time, yeah. We got another... the thing about Team Taz is that, like, every member of Team Taz kind of looks like they are Taz's gay son.
And, oh my god.
Like,
I'm not seeing gay, but they definitely all look like his sons. It's only Ricky Starks who looks like...
You don't think, especially when it was just, like, Taz, Ricky Starks, and Cage, that it looked like Taz and his two gay sons. Will Hobbs, not so much, but, like, I don't know. That's the vibe that I get from Team Taz.
It's because Ricky Starks doesn't wear socks. His limbs.
We got another title card for next week. We have an advertised match of Thunder Rosa versus Priscilla Kelly. I gotta say, as much as we kind of clowned on this for being, like, fucking $9 per episode, they did a really good job of making me want to watch the next episode.
Yeah.
Between, like, the Friendship Farm, Eli Drake, like, talking about next week.
I was definitely bummed wasn't seeing this Priscilla Kelly match.
Yeah, I was like, they're doing a really good job of, like, roping me in, you know? We have a little a Dan Joseph promo about the UWN TV Championship match that he's going to have.
This man has the nerdiest voice I've ever heard.
Yeah. He's a weird, like, he's got a weird face. He's got a weird voice. I didn't like this guy.
No, he's a nerd. what I got from this whole thing was he was supposed to be the baby face. And I didn't like him at all. Like, there's nothing about this person I liked.
One of the things that turned me off so much about him is the thing that he reminded me of the most. Because he's coming out and he's like, Marquez, like, you know, I've beaten, what's his name? I've beaten Levi Shapiro before. You know, you've seen it. Even when I lose, I win. It's all good. Like, it doesn't matter. I already have the championship. And the whole time, all I was thinking was, like, he sounds exactly like that dude in Die Hard who says, Hans, Bubby! Like, that's the vibe that I got from Dan Joseph.
To me, he was so much more nerdier than that guy. That guy's like a schmoozer, but, like, Dan Joseph is, like, his voice is, like, cartoonishly nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone were to picture, like, a Star Trek nerd in The Simpsons, that is what this dude's voice is. But I guess his shtick is that he is nerdy, but he's so committed. Like, he's kind of like Bailey, where he's just like all passion, all hard hitting, all energy.
Yeah.
Very weird vibe, though.
He's kind of like midlife crisis Johnny Gargano.
To me, he's more like the nerd, like, what's his face from Frasier, but if he was super buff.
David Hyde Pierce?
No, the Niles, nerd, like, Niles. Who likes Star Trek. No.
Oh, Noel.
Noel. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my god. So perfect.
Frasier deep cuts.
Yeah. Josh, do you have anything else to say about Dan Joseph?
Not yet.
Okay. next up, we've got a tag match between the Wolf Zaddies and the Tribe.
So Wolf Zaddies is Jay Cabrera and Tito, and the tribe is...
Shay Cabrera.
Oh, Shay?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Latino meat.
Latino meat was such, very... so good.
Yeah.
That was wild.
As much as Wolf Zaddies is the worst tag team I've ever heard, and I hate saying it.
Like, it made
me
cringe.
The words coming out of my mouth are like I'm gagging on them right now. But Latino meat was funny as fuck.
Yeah, listening to the commentators say that was really funny.
Do you think he has a t-shirt that says... Do you think he has a t-shirt that says, lie, eat, steal?
Oh my god, if he doesn't, he better. He better get on that.
Pro wrestling TM. Trademark that right now, motherfucker. Yeah. we're getting that kickback from that $8.99 pay-per-view.
And the tribe is, of course, Hawaiian Lion and Navajo Warrior.
Can I tell you, when the tribe came out, they had... I was so fucking on board with these dudes immediately. They came out with this fucking sick riff, looking like the native Viking warriors. Like, these guys, like, their entrance was so sick. And the first minute and a half of this match of just, like, these hosses... fucking laying into each other. Like, you know that I love my big dudes. I am still pulling for 305 Live on the WWE Network. And then after about, like, 2 minutes, this match just goes completely to shit.
This was not talking about the match. There's this one point where there's a run-in, and then somebody else runs in. And so the referee, she's trying to get control of the match. Like, she's trying to get control. And all I could, like, the big thing in this match is how lost the ref looked in this match. She was so fucking
lost. She doesn't know.
And she was trying to, like, she's saying, hey, you, get out of here. And then she turned to that person and be like, hey, you, get out of here. And then she'd look somewhere else and she'd be like, one. And then she'd stop and then do something else. She kept on, like, going around in a circle. And I was like, what's going on? And it was so, like, it's so tough to explain because a lot of the times, like, the ref is trying to, like, you know, like, get control and they'll start counting somebody or, like, you know, like, a little bit more authoritative, right? Mm-hmm. There was none of that. This was so sad to watch, and it lasted so long.
Yeah, she really should have just picked two dudes and been like, you are the official guys. Like, she should have just picked them, whether it was... actually, like, continuity-wise, right or not, she should have just been like, I don't fucking care. You guys are the legit, like, guys in the legal men. The other two are not. You gotta fucking sko.
And because commentary kept being like, I don't even know who's legal right now. Like, it was brutal. And then, like, both dudes in the tribe get so gassed, like, they can't even fucking walk or, like, throw a punch. And then... the Wolf Zaddies keep falling on each other. I don't know if you noticed that, but they kept trying to do these, like, they kept trying to do these double team spots where one of them would inevitably just end up, like, falling on the other one. And like, pathetically, like, crawling out of the way while somebody's trying to do a pin. It was, this match was fucking brutal. I didn't even write down who won.
So, there is no winner because time runs out.
That's the winner.
The bell rings.
That they didn't previously establish.
They don't establish that there's a time limit. The bell rings, the ref looks at them and goes, the time ran out!
Oh.
Like, she's really pissed at them about it. And then that's it. And then the tribe just gets, like, angry and starts beating the fuck out of the Wolf Zaddies, and they exit to, like... violence or whatever, like, they just leave the ring beating them up. And it was just so clear that it was a huge botch that happened. And, like, it started off strong for, like, 2 minutes, like you were saying, like, and it just devolved into such a mess, and they never got over it, and it clearly botched the finish. And it was wild.
It was fucking brutal. Josh, I can't even imagine how many bald heads this got.
I mean the match was bad. Like, the ref thing was bad. The ending, you know how much I love fucking bullshit endings in matches where you don't get any resolution.
Any conclusion. It's,
a time limit draw.
A time limit draw on a pay-per-view? You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, Josh hates that.
Come on.
It's not a pay-per-view, though.
It is a pay-per-view.
It's the first episode. It's just their weekly show.
It's a weekly pay-per-view, man. It's $8.99 per show. That's your paying per view.
That's actually so true. That's a pay-per-view.
You can't have it both ways, brother.
Sorry.
I gave this 2 bald heads. And I felt like I was being generous with this.
That's very generous.
That is super generous, yeah.
Because I feel like that's like the equivalent of like 4 bald heads the other way, right? No, I guess 0. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have to do the math on this. But anyway, it's not. It wasn't good. Like, this was very bad. And I'll never watch either of these teams again as long as I live. Yeah.
Next up, we got a nice little Mike Bennett promo here. Dude looks like a different fucking guy, eh?
He does.
Like,
he's
I almost didn't recognize him until Maria showed up.
Maria. Josh, real quick, can you give us a bald head rating on Talk and Shop Mania 2 as a whole?
What a piece of shit. Talk and Shop Mania 2. It was tough. That was a tough one to watch. I would say the overall bald rating, I'm going to go with 2.5 bald heads.
Woof.
Ooh, okay.
Not great. Okay.
Listen, at least it was watchable. Like, it was bad, but it was funny. Like, I laughed at it.
Okay.
I laughed at it.
That's pretty good.
The match I just watched, I didn't laugh once. I didn't find anything.
I will say, this Mike Bennett promo, when he made that Saudi Arabia joke,
That was funny.
I popped. That was good.
I also wrote that down. I loved that.
I'm getting a little tired of the narrative of like every one of the like kind of ex-WWE guys' character is how much they hated working for WWE. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, like all of the guys in like Brody Lee and Miro and like Sean Spears, like all of the like Cody's entire fucking life is about how much Triple H was mean to him.
I will say this.
Heath is fucking killing it on Impact right now. Don't even start with me.
So he's doing that ex-WWE shtick right then, because his whole thing is like, I can't use that name because someone else stole my name. And
but
like,
he's doing it funny. He's like, his
so
gimmick
that's what
isn't.
I'm
yeah. But yeah,
if anybody who's left that has a proper gripe with WWE, it's Mike Bennett. It's like 100%. If there's anybody that's going to like drive that car, it's like Mike Bennett all the way. That guy was there for years. They like put him up with like this, like, you know, Mike and Maria Bennett thing, the greatest love. And then he wasn't on TV for years. They gave him no storyline. They gave him nothing. It's like, maybe then, like, you know, 4 years later, maybe we'll put you on like, you know, 205 Live. Nothing. He had 2 matches on 205 Live. And then they put him in this fucking stupid 24/7. You remember this? The 24/7 thing where
cuck storyline?
Yeah. The cuck storyline where they had his wife come out and like berate him on TV and then like a fake pregnancy or whatever that thing was.
Oh, that was rough.
And then they signed him to a 5-year contract, both of them, and then they fired them both right afterwards. Get out of here. Mike Bennett, you toe that line, buddy. you hate that company.
I did think that his like snapback and sleeveless hoodie made him look like a real jabroni as compared to Nick Aldis's fucking suit.
Right.
Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, these two guys are going against each other. I know whose corner I'm fucking in. Like, I don't know. I feel like he was going for like the scrappy underdog thing, but it was just like, you look like an old guy in a hoodie. It was very, it was like kind of Uncle Rico looks, you know, from Napoleon Dynamite. Like, he was like, you know, if Vince McMahon had put me in WrestleMania, I would have made State, no doubt.
No doubt in my mind. How much you want to bet I can throw a football over the mountains? throw Maria over the mountains.
We got the Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson versus Showtime Jordan Cruz. Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson is my new favorite wrestler, man. He's got like a 10 out of 10 theme. He comes out looking like he was rocking the snapback sleeveless shirt look to a T. He's crushing it.
This guy's killing it.
I don't know, man. I thought it was pretty funny that he walks around in his Big Trouble in Little China tank top pulled down so low that it looks like he's just wearing a tank top and no undies. Like, he's poo-bearing it.
That's a sexy look. Yeah, he's poo-bearing it.
That's great.
Jordan Cruz comes out and Dirty Daddy fucking does him dirty. Beats him up on the apron. He does a nice long running lariat on the ramp. Didn't need Arn Anderson to tell him to do that. Fucking puts out Jordan Cruz, starts cutting a promo about, again, like, you know, you made me come all the way here from New York and this is the best you have to give me. Keeps calling out Billy. I love that he kept calling out Billy Corgan. Like, that he was like, you know, give me some real competition. You're supposed to be running the show here. I thought this was great. Everything about this was great.
Huge Eddie Kingston vibes.
Huge Eddie Kingston vibes. And, like, I'm a Mad King stan right now. You know, we stan a Mad King. I thought the promo was good here. I wish that this had just been a squash match, though. I didn't need to see like a full actual match after this. Like,
yeah, I was also, when Cruz got back in and the bell rang, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I could have just ended it.
Oh honey, no.
I thought it was like, I thought they added a little suspense to it by doing that. Cause, like, you know, like, we've seen it booked 1,000 times before where it's like the over cocky heel, like, you know, gets his comeuppance a little bit, you know, and gets hit with a surprise fruit roll up or something like that. But I thought this, you know, I thought this was pretty good.
It's what I would have liked, kind of what we were talking about earlier, is how well they were building my intrigue for next week. Is if it, like, the assault on the ring had actually put out Jordan Cruz, and the thing was that they were going to have like a no DQ match or a false count anywhere match next week. Because, like, they didn't get to have their match this week. If they had, like, after the Dan Joseph match, if, like, Billy Corgan had come out and made an announcement and been like, this is going to happen next week, I would have been like, fuck, maybe I'm dropping another $9.
Like, yeah, and honestly, like, look, as we'll discuss the rest of the show, it seems like they could have used the extra time. Like, they would have benefited from cutting this a little bit and just being like, Cruz, don't get up. Like, just don't go back in there because we're running late. As we'll explore later.
That being said, Chris Dickinson hits one of the best looking Death Valley drivers I think I've ever seen. To finish this match. Like that's a match that usually is like
a move.
That's a move that's usually like, I'm like, yeah, it's like a WWE safe pile driver, right? It doesn't count.
Oh.
This actually looked like he fucking just like compacted Jordan Cruz's neck. It was great.
Yeah, this is a brutal match. Like, Dickinson really beat the shit out of him. Like, honestly, that's what I was thinking this whole match. I was like, he's throwing stuff in, and, like, he looks like he's, like, he can, like, lay it in good, so it looks believable, and, like, you know, all slams look really solid, and, like, he's a believable guy. I'm, like, a big fan of this guy in the ring. Just, like, on that short semi-squash match I saw of him, I'm a big fan of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
What did you think of the match?
I gave it 3.25. 3.25 ball pits. Thought it was pretty
nice.
Good.
Nice. That's really good, considering how short it was.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
No. Now we have the United Wrestling Network Television Championship match between Dan Joseph and Levi Shapiro, accompanied by Howdy Price. Ooh. Get a look at these two fuckers. They look so gross.
I loved them. I loved the gimmick on both of them that are completely incongruous.
Yep.
Like, I don't know why Howdy Price is Levi's manager, but holy fuck, they're both fantastic, separately and together.
Mm-hmm.
You're so interested in the lore. Like, it's like the announcers were talking, they're like they say something about his hand having surgery on or something on it. Like, I think I kind of half heard it. And so now he's got like this bionic grip.
His finishing move is the Iron Claw, which they sort of like threw back to like the Von Erichs.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like sort of like pedigree of this finishing submission, this like iron grip. And they were saying that it was a thing where it was like he injured his elbow.
Yeah.
And when it healed, the tendons healed too tight.
Oh, so his grip, sick.
And it's like, I'm so down for the, like, the kayfabe finishing move of, like, because we always kind of talk about that as, like, what sets, like, Shawn Michaels' super kick apart from everybody else's super sure. kick? What makes that so good, you know? And it's like,
sure, a lot of people,
yeah, a lot of people are doing the sort of, like, vice grip kind of move as, like, a transition thing. And I love that they have a kayfabe reason as to why Levi Shapiro's is, like, so much more devastating.
That's cool.
I want that for every wrestler. I want to know why is the paradigm shift so much better than any other DDT, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah, that's sick. We need Taz to give us the lowdown on everything.
Yeah, give me Taz's techniques.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to see that zoom in with a little circle. I'm like, like,
yeah, yeah. You see what he's doing being. Right here is he's shifting his hips in such a way.
But this is, Levi Shapiro is so gross and, like, slimy for this whole match. Like, he reminded me a lot of the dude who played Chernabog on.
I also got that vibe.
American Gods, like,
so much that actor, yeah, like, completely.
He was great, and, like,
he just always plays a dirty Russian, like, character. That mm-hmm. actor,
and like Howdy Price is pulling some, like, belt shenanigans, just like, big fat Asian cowboy. I'm here for it. Like,
sign me up.
Yeah. The match itself was, like, pretty short and sweet. I didn't really have a whole lot to say about it in general. Josh,
how good was that finish? Like, what happened to the finish there?
It's awkward. So what happens is, it seems like an accident. Like, I think that the ref, like, didn't count. Like, the ref almost didn't want to count the three when Dan Joseph, like, he does a move and he pulls him up for a pin, and the ref counts to two, and he expects to stop, and then Dan, like, doesn't let him go. Levi doesn't kick out, and then the ref does a really awkward, like, three. And then that's just it. And it was just clearly, like, I think what it was, what I'm guessing, was that there was, like, the match was supposed to go longer, but someone must have told Dan and Levi, like, you need to end this now. Mm-hmm. Like, if this has to be cut short.
Yeah, something
and
had to
the ref was not ready, or, like, wasn't expecting it to be that exact roll-up that right. would end it, and it was just awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely an awkward ending. I gave it 2 3/4 bald heads. I mean, mm-hmm. nothing. It was not really long enough to give it a proper rating, so.
Yeah. Dan Joseph retains his title, I guess. Like, nothing compelling about that guy.
And again, like, during the match, like, I hated this guy during the match. Like, all the stuff he was doing that I guess was supposed to be, like, I was like, he was selling, like, a baby face, and he was doing, like, baby face stuff, and I'm like, oh, I guess he is a baby face, because I was, like, confused with his, like, you know, like, shit-eating grin and, like, kind of, like, over-the-top baby. And I'm like, maybe they're doing, like, one of those things where he's, like, a Kurt Angle, where he's, like, so over the top and, like, baby face-ish that I'm supposed to fucking hate this guy, and I do. I don't know. Something about him. I just don't like this guy.
Moving on, we're at our main event. We have Mike Bennett versus Nick Aldis for the NWA World's Championship. Sweet Charlotte, the 10 pounds of gold. Mike Bennett hits his entrance, and he really did just do the whole Sean Spears makeover short of the mohawk. Like, you got the same tights, you got, like, a full sleeve of tattoos, shaved his beard, shaved his head, put on, like, 20 pounds of muscle. Like, I as soon as he came out, I was just like, yeah, this is exactly the, like, the Ty Dillinger transformation to a T for me, which isn't necessarily, like, a bad thing. But, like, I don't know, for me, it just felt like it was like, I would have liked, if he wanted to make, like, a big change, I would have liked to see him make a change that wasn't just, like, being generic indie wrestler guy.
Right. Okay. I thought it was interesting that Maria comes out wearing a hoodie that says milk money on the hood. I don't know what that's referencing, or, like, I don't know if that's, like, part of their gimmick or whatever, but I was very thrown off by that.
I did not notice that at all.
Yeah. Seems kind of gross.
I thought all the stuff that, like, commentary was talking about, like, the sort of, like, Bennett versus Canellis distinction, I felt like that was kind of unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, you don't have to give me a backstory for why the dude is using his name. Like, that's just his name.
Well, actually, I think what it was is they were giving a backstory to why she was using his name.
Sure, but, like, again, even, like, I feel like you want to distance yourself from, like, the aforementioned, like, WWE Canellis Cuck storyline as much as you can. And, like, even for them to get, like, acknowledge it or give it any credence at all is just, like, it doesn't matter. It's a new thing. It's fine. I didn't need to be reminded of it.
I didn't mind it. And also mainly because I especially appreciated it because, like, they just say one quick line. They just say, like, oh, Maria, like, had Mike using her last name in a previous, like, point in their career. So now she's using his as a mark of respect. And that's all they say about it. I didn't mind it because they specifically, her name is listed as Maria Canellis, but they refer to her as Miss Bennett, as Maria Bennett. The whole time they're talking about her, they say that. And it was like, why are you, like, showing me her name is this and talking about her like her name is that? And so I actually didn't mind that line of dialogue.
Josh, do you have any insight into the milk money thing? Is that like a talk and shop mania joke that I am missing?
I don't know. I imagine something to do with the pregnancy and the kid. I think that's probably it. Probably not too much to look into there, you know?
So then Nick Aldis comes out.
Music guy drops the ball fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, that was definitely, they're trying to sell it as, like, Nick Aldis is playing mind games when he there's just, like, a huge pause nothing happens, and, like,
and then Nick Aldis just walks out
looking super pissed.
Yeah.
Like, because someone clearly fucked up in the back.
Yeah. You could tell, too, he's, like, super angry about it. And then he was, like, he just, like, threw his belt in the ring. He's, like, let's go. I'm just going to make the best of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought this was a good main event. This was like a title match ass title match. Like, I was pretty down for this start to finish.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. It definitely, like, raised the stakes immediately because about 2 seconds into this match, Mike spears the ref.
Yeah.
And I was like, I do not expect a ref bump, like, first thing in a match. So I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
What's going to happen now? Like, what are they going to do? Was that on purpose? Like, I was totally thrown by that, which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Like, I don't know. Like, it was, I don't know. It was nice, like, with Maria, like, having that little exchange. And then, who was it came out? The woman from earlier.
Camille
came out and she, like, confronted her. And I like that, like, kind of, like, equalizer thing where it's like,
yeah,
it's like, now it's like, oh, no, nobody can interfere. This is going to be like a straightforward, even match. And I guess the ref was so, like, brutally knocked out that, like, three refs from the back had to come out. They had to, you know, like, save this ref's ass. And then he started, like, counting the other two out, which I was like, it would be so sweet if this ended, like, with a no contest earlier. Or, like, a would time limit draw and a double count out here.
Yeah.
Well, so it's great. It's like we get, like, Camille coming out, and they refer to her as, like, the insurance policy, which is what Aldis referred to her back in NWA Power when they had the whole, like, Strictly Business thing. And I like that continuity. Because especially,
she's, like, his enforcer.
Yeah. And it was good in the context of this where it was, like, I felt like the UWN-NWA partnership, like, to some extent was kind of a reset. Where Camille in NWA Power was a heel. She was allied with Nick Aldis. She was allied with Strictly Business. And her match on this card, she was very much the face, right? She was, like, she was the powerhouse face against, like, the heel Heather Monroe. And so to have her come out in this match, to me, was unexpected because I wasn't expecting her. I knew that she had history with Nick Aldis, but I was like, oh, he's still, like, the heel champ. She's doing this whole, like, solo face run. So, like, when she came out, I was genuinely surprised, and I thought that was, like, a really good beat in the story of the match that kind of furthered the narrative of like the promotion and like these factions and these alignments. Mm. I thought like the tombstone on the ring ramp spot was fucking sick. And then, yeah, we get to this count out that they both make it back in for. Mm-hmm. Like it was again, like that kind of like, it's the thing, the booking of this match to me felt like, every match that Cody tries to book.
Yeah.
Where you have your ref spots, your outside interference, your, is the good guy going to cave and use the belt?
Mm-hmm.
But Cody doesn't know when to stop. And I think like whoever was in charge of booking this match, towed the line really well. It was a perfectly like, there were enough beats and enough shenanigans and enough shit going on to make it feel like a big main event title match.
Yeah.
But it wasn't overbooked for me.
Yeah.
There was such a clear storyline throughout the whole thing. I really, really like this match, and I think it speaks to how great of a champion Nick Aldis is.
Mm-hmm.
And how underutilized in WWE Mike Bennett was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Told a good story about Mike Bennett, like, not wanting to give up, and then, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, how much he needed it, and, you know, Nick Aldis just being just the cut above, and just a little bit too good for him, and kind of getting outclassed and outshowed, and, like, you know, Mike Bennett held in there as long as he could, but, you know, at the end, when Nick Aldis put on the submission, you know, Mike Bennett, you know, he wouldn't tap out, he kept on trying to rally and get to the ropes, but eventually
it was, and they did... They did that hope spot so well when Bennett almost gets to the rope and Aldis pulls him away and like sinks it back in the center of the ring. Like that's a thing that I think, like, that's your classic submission spot that I think some people kind of over telegraph, some people kind of like undersell.
Yeah.
And I felt like the two of them in this, like, I legitimately thought he was going to get the rope. And when they pulled him away, that was like, I felt that, like, I loved this match.
Yeah, I also really liked the spot that you touched on where Maria runs out and tries to give Mike the belt to hit Aldis with, and mm-hmm. like he almost does, like he's about to do it, and then he looks at it and goes like, "Nah, I can't do it," and she's really upset, and it's like, I really like the intricacy of like
heel manager face wrestler. The best dynamic in the game.
Yeah, like, I like that. And it doesn't break either of their characters at all.
Not at all, yeah.
Like, that it would mean that much to her. I also just wanted to point out that this isn't, like, anything, but it was just a fun thing that I noticed, is that Bennett, A, really likes to chest slap. Like, he goes for the chest slap all the time on Nick Aldis in this match.
Mm-hmm.
And also... in all of the match, not just the chest slaps, but, like, for everything, Bennett is fully unloading, like, hitting him. Like, you can hear that, like skin-on-skin slappy sound.
Yeah.
And Nick Aldis is doing the very polite, like, stamp while I hit thing, where all of the sound is coming from him stamping. And then Bennett, like... by contrast, Bennett's hits don't sound as hard because it's not a huge stamp,
mm-hmm.
but it's just like that, like,
yeah,
sound. And I was just like, damn, Mike is going off on Nick. He is just fucking hitting this dude right now.
Yeah.
Bam.
And I think this is like the only out and out NWA match on the card. Like, it really stood out and showed how much, like, this whole UWN primetime is, like, really less resting on the laurels of the NWA. Mm. And how much that, like, we kind of touched on this earlier, that, like, it's hard to not draw that comparison. And that, like, when I was watching this match, it was, like, the rest of this was, like, oh, here's a bunch of indie promotions coming together to put on a show. And this was, like, all right, now it's time for the big boys to play. This is, like, a real... fucking like actual good wrestling match.
Yeah.
And it really, like, I was thinking about when I was watching this, I was like, how great would this have been in the NWA Power setup with the studio audience, Wade Barrett on commentary. I think this match would have just been like that much better in the context of like the Power studio setup in like fucking Georgia or wherever they were filming. But I I've said it like three times already. I fucking love this match. Josh, how many bald heads did it get?
Gave it 3.5 bald heads. I thought that was a fair rating for this match. And you know, wasn't up to the four bald head. I don't think anything quite got there this bait, but.
The thing is, I also don't think that this is like a four bald head or a four star or a four Labatt Blue, whatever my rating system would be.
Oh my God, don't.
Match. I probably would have put this at like a 3.75, personally, but I thought this was really good.
Mm-hmm.
We like to close things off with a little high spot and a botched spot. Little honorable mentions to something that we really liked about the Pape, something that we didn't like so much. I feel like I have jumped the gun and gone first on the past like four of these, so I don't know if either of you guys want to take it.
I can go.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
My high spot is Nick Aldis and just how much of a pro he is, and like throughout the entire pay-per-view, he's like Josh said, he speaks completely eloquently for his promos. He even like sells the fact that he has no music introducing him to the ring, but he just fucking does what he can with that, and he pulls it off very well. He's just so classy.
He's a fucking professional.
He's a fucking professional. Big time. Yeah,
he is. He's so smooth. So he's my high spot. My botch spot is just going to be that tag match between the Wolf Zaddies and the Tribe. That was a general mess, and I feel like it marks the general, like, sort of the end of this pay-per-view kind of fell apart for me. Like, I think there were a lot of things, and that tag match was like the beginning of this like slew of bad circumstances that happened, where it kind of felt like they kind of slipped and they'd never really got their footing again after that, and like things, like time went too long, and like da da da, all of these problems happened. But yeah, that tag match was so bad, and I enjoyed it for the first bit, so I feel like that's why it hit harder that it turned out being bad, was because I also was like, when they were doing all those like big dude chest bumps, I was like, yeah, let's go, let's do this, like I was all into it, and then it was just like, oh no, this is a mess.
I go next. My botch spot of the night, I'll start off with that because it's the exact same as Lauren's. I mean, that tag match was the drizzle and shits, as we call it in the biz. Yeah, it was horrible. Like, it wasn't a great match. I felt like both the tag teams got super gassed super early. Felt lazy a lot of times. Like, and again, like, I don't like shitting on wrestling just to shit on wrestling, right? But just the match was lazy. And then, like, the ref thing was so, like, I didn't know if they were ribbing the ref. Like, if they were, like, just, like, that's what it felt like almost, because it was so over the top. And, yeah, the ending was stupid. It was a time limit draw. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. It's like, do we really need to see the definitive finale of this feud?
Yeah. I'm going to say, yeah, the high spot's got to be, I think, Chris Dickinson. I think for him, it's like, that's a, you know, a guy that wasn't on my radar at all before. And then in one night, I'm completely sold on this guy. I want to see more of him. So good job, Chris Dickinson. You,
the
dirty daddy himself.
Yeah. So my high spot was, the Monikers. I loved everybody's like little, like the dirty daddy, the National Treasure,
the Showtime.
Showtime, Jordan the Cruz. Golden Boy,
Brick House,
All Damn Day, Killer Will All Bay. Day, Killer Bay, like the fucking prism of excellence. Everybody had like a little thing
that
was
fun.
So good, you know, and that like was such a throwback, right? Like it felt like such a like 80s wrestling or like 90s boxing, like kind of like big fight sort of like very like that was kind of the thing where it was like some of the stuff that was missing about the NWA power sort of trappings and but like having everybody with their nickname. Very much felt like that old school throwback thing that I liked so much about Power, and that I think like certain things where it's like fucking like you watch like WWE and it's just like, oh yeah, you're big, you're like Vince McMahon being like, we sell over the top characters. And it's a modern day superhero and it's modern day myth. And it's like, yeah, what's the guy's name? It's like, Seth.
Yeah.
He's fighting a guy named Drew.
Drew is literally the only one I can think of that has a moniker, and his is like the Scottish psychopath or the Scottish warrior now.
Yeah, but it's like also that sucks.
Yeah,
that like the Scottish warrior is fucking terrible. It doesn't have the
same ring as the big bad booty daddy.
Yeah, it doesn't have the pizzazz, you know. Uh-huh. And it's like AEW is kind of trying to do that a little bit with like the American Nightmare or fucking whatever, but it doesn't have that same feel. Like everybody else that's trying to do this right now is so forced. Like the absolute worst one to me, I don't know if we've talked about this on pod, but the Murder Hawk Monster.
No, oh, right, yeah.
It is like the Murder Hawk Monster Lance Archer. If it's like if it was just the Murder Hawk Lance Archer, or if it was just the Monster right. Lance Archer, but it's like they put them together and it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
My botched spot of the night is that Mike Bennett did not come out to "Here's to the Greatest Love I've Ever Known."
Burning up in your love.
Yeah. Our neighbors really loved that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Overall, UWN, NWA, Primetime Live, like, I thought this was, like, a decent show. I definitely don't think that I would pay fucking $9 every week to watch it.
No.
Like, it really made me miss NWA Power.
100%.
Yeah, I hope they still do have, like, actual pay-per-view, like, large events,
because
mm-hmm. I would tune in for that,
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
Just not every week.
I would say basically any time that there is a pay-per-view featuring a Nick Aldis title defense, I would tune in for that, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
If you got any thoughts out there about UWN Primetime or Nick Aldis or Mike Bennett's theme songs, you can hit us up on facebook.com/stonecoldshots. We're on Instagram and Twitter at stonecoldshotspod or stonecoldshotspodcast.
Soon to be a very active Twitter.
Yeah.
Only
tweeting at Dave Meltzer.
Gonna get blocked so
fight,
fast.
Fight me, you coward.
You need to end every tweet with respond if you're not afraid.
Tweet me if you can.
Yeah.
Survive if I let you.
Yeah, exactly.
You can leave us a rating and review on any podcasting app of choice. Give us those 5 bald heads.
5 bald heads. Again, maximum you can give us 5.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cool.
This is the greatest love I've ever known.